Evening. We are going to go ahead and call to order the Atascadero City Council meeting of Tuesday, May 14th. And I would ask Mayor Pro Tem Borbeau to lead us in a pledge to the flag.
Please stand and join me in saluting our nation's flag. I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Roll call, please.
Councilmember Fonsi?
Here.
Councilmember Funk?
Here.
Councilmember Newsom?
Here.
Mayor Pro Tem Borbeau?
Here.
Mayor Moreno?
Here.
All present.
And do I have an approval of the agenda?
I move approval of the agenda.
Second.
A motion by Mayor Pro Tem Borbeau, a second by Councilmember Fonsi. Roll call, please.
Councilmember Fonsi?
Yes.
Councilmember Funk?
Yes.
Councilmember Newsom?
Yes.
Mayor Pro Tem Borbeau?
Yes.
Mayor Moreno?
Yes, ma'am.
Motion passes.
Thank you. Moving on to the consent calendar. The consent calendar contains items that are considered routine and can be passed in one motion unless there is a member of the council or a member of the public wishing to pull an item. So I will ask, do we have a member of the council that is wishing to pull an item? Seeing none, I will ask, is there a member of the public wishing to pull an item from the consent calendar? Seeing none, I will look for a motion.
I move approval of the consent calendar.
I'll second.
Motion by Councilmember Fonsi, second by Mayor Pro Tem Borbeau. Roll call, please.
Councilmember Fonsi?
Yes.
Councilmember Funk?
Yes.
Councilmember Newsom?
Yes.
Mayor Pro Tem Borbeau?
Yes.
Mayor Moreno?
Yes, ma'am.
Motion passes.
Thank you. We are on to updates from the city manager.
Thank you, Mayor. Maybe. Luke, I'm having problems. It is on green, but so first of all, first thing I want to talk about are several new restaurants in town that are now open for business. So there's a reminder, Colony Market and Deli at the corner of Traffic Way and El Camino in the former gas station building. They have a great menu and are already receiving lots of positive press, including coverage in Forbes magazine.
Yeah.
A very nice write-up there. And I have to say from personal experience, very good food, some different menu items that are fantastic. They have a Monte Cristo sandwich, which I haven't seen for a long time, but was very interesting, so it's all good. We also have Malibu Brew. They're now at their new location on East Mall in the Century 21 building. I know that they are a favorite here at City Hall, so you'll often see Nick and Phil walking down there together to grab their afternoon coffee. Great stuff there, so please frequent them. We have La Adelita, authentic Mexican restaurant and seafood in the Adobe Plaza. I know that Laura went there for Mother's Day. How'd you like it?
It's delicious. Try their molcajetes. They're fabulous.
And then Terry, Laura, and I all went to Don Q's today for lunch. It's American cuisine with a real Latin flair. Absolutely delicious. They have a really interesting looking dinner menu in addition to their lunch menu. Steaks and Latin food and a lot of other favorites too. And then we also have the Halfway Station. It just opened under a new name with new owners. It was previously the Last Stage West, and the Halfway Station has been beautifully refurbished as a casual destination bar and restaurant on Highway 41. So it's located halfway between here and Morro Bay. It's great to have someone back in there. So a lot of good restaurants. Please come out and patronize these restaurants along with our favorites here in town that we do if we want to keep seeing more restaurants come to town. I want to do a quick recap of Brew at the Zoo. So attendance at this event increased by 35% over the last year and was a sellout. The winner of the 2019 Brew at the Zoo Snapchat photo contest was Jamie Creeth, and she will be back next year with two complimentary tickets to the event. Thank you to all of our beverage vendors. We would not have been able to do this without you. And everyone should save the date now for the next Brew at the Zoo to be held on Saturday, April 25th, 2020. So hopefully everybody has had a chance to come out and check out this fantastic fun event. I heard a lot of great things about it. Unfortunately, I had to miss it this year, but enjoyed it in years past. We also have a lot of upcoming events. So this Friday, May 17th, kicks off Bike to Work Day with the Sunken Gardens Bike Fest. So May is Bike Month, and we're celebrating Bike to Work Day at City Hall. The City of Atascadero is teaming up with Slowcog and Rideshare to bring Bike to Work Day's Sunken Gardens Bike Fest from 4 to 6 at City Hall and the Sunken Gardens. There will be tasty beverages and local appetizers to fuel the ride home, and the happy hour station locations are for age 21 and over, so we will have those. On Saturday, May 18th, there are two fabulous events taking place in the city. So we have the 5th annual Z-Day Car Show will be taking place here in the Sunken Gardens from 10 a.m. to 3 p.m. Come see stock and high-performance enhanced Z-Cars. There will be vendor booths, prize raffles, and lots of great food, trophies, show models, musical entertainment, and there will be over 80 cars on display around Sunken Gardens. And then also, this Saturday, May 18th, is the 4th annual Lake Fest and Cardboard Boat Regatta taking place from 10 to 4 at the Atascadero Lake and the Lake Park. There'll be a variety of activities, including cardboard and duct tape boat races, paddleboard races, music and kids activities, over 15 vendors with a wide variety of items for purchase, plus a 2-for-1 offer on admission to the Charles Paddock Zoo. So if you haven't seen the red panda, go check out the Lake Fest and then the zoo. You can learn how to build your own cardboard boat to race on the lake or try out a paddleboard and learn how to race it in the paddleboard races. There will also be a wine and beer garden for adults. The event is free to attend, but be sure to bring your wallet to enjoy the food, drinks, music, and shopping opportunity. And proceeds from the event will be used to benefit improvements in and around Atascadero Lake. So this event is a wonderful event put on by the Friends of the Atascadero Lake for the last 4 years, and it's one that we look forward to. One more on this slide. Boy. We have Graybots Recognition. That's going to be Wednesday, May 22nd, here at City Hall from 3:30 to 5:30 out in front of Palma Avenue on the front steps of City Hall. This event will honor our Atascadero World Championship award-winning robotics team. So as you all know, they won the World Championships once again in 2019, and we want to celebrate their victory and recognize the accomplishments of these young students. It's absolutely amazing. We also have the Faces of Freedom Memorial Day ceremony. That's going to be coming up on Monday, May 27th at 12 noon, as we remember and honor our nation's fallen hero. This one-hour ceremony will be held at the Faces of Freedom Veterans Memorial on Highway 41 near the Atascadero Lake Park, and a community barbecue will follow the ceremony. We also have some council things coming up. So tomorrow night, Wednesday, May 15th, here at City Hall, beginning at 6 p.m., we will have our strategic planning update. We'll be going over the action plan and talking about other items. No actions will be taken at that. Anything else will come here, but please, the public, we would like to have you there at that event. We also have Talk on the Block Town Hall Meetings. This is a program that is sponsored by the Chamber of Commerce. So the Chamber of Commerce is working with the city to implement a new series of community meetings we're calling Talk on the Block. The first round of our Talk on the Block sessions will begin later this month. These will be very casual gatherings held at various locations throughout the community, with the city coming to various neighborhoods. Everybody is welcome to attend any event. You don't have to attend the event in your neighborhood. Everybody is welcome at everyone. The city staff will give a short presentation about the city, just giving some general facts about the city. And then the meetings will be opened up so that residents can share their questions and input and ideas that they'd like to ask staff or discuss with staff. Some of our council members will be in attendance. I know that not all of you can make all four of those, but I know that several of you would like to attend as many as you can, and so you will be in attendance. But it's really put on by the chamber and staff will be answering questions. So the first one's Wednesday, May 29th at Atascadero United Methodist Church at 11605 El Camino Real. Thursday, May 30th is at the Atascadero Community Church at 5850 Rosario. We're going to also have one on Wednesday, June 5th and Thursday, June 6th, and we're still trying to, the Chamber is still trying to pin down locations for those. And with that, I'd be happy to answer any questions that the Council may have.
Just want to say, you'll notice so many of the events are like the fourth annual, and Terry Banish has now been with us for 4 years in this month. So a very big thanks to Terry and everybody that pulls together to help you with that. We have some really fabulous events here that are year after year becoming big draws for the people that live here that are really enjoying them and from people from elsewhere. So thank you for all of that. Anybody have any questions about the city manager's report? Councilmember Fonzie.
I was wondering if you could tell me the time that the Gray Bots will be here again.
It will be from 3:30 to 5:30. I'm not sure that an agenda is out exactly for what will be occurring then, but we'd like to really recognize them. So we're talking about doing a short parade, some recognition and demonstrations in front of City Hall, and a lot of other things. Hopefully we'll have the marching band and cheer teams and others here to help us celebrate.
Thank you.
Thank you. All right, we are on to community forum. This is the part of our meeting where the public is welcome to come and speak to us on anything that is under our jurisdiction, but which is not on the agenda tonight. Speakers are limited to 3 minutes, and the lights are on to help you gauge when that time is drawing near. And we will limit it to no more than 30 minutes, but I don't think that's going to be a problem tonight, judging by our attendance. Please state your name for the record if you do come to speak, and know that any item brought forward at public comment cannot become an item for discussion this evening. But if city staff needs to follow up with you, we will make sure that that happens. So go ahead and open community forum. If there's any members of the public wishing to speak, please come forward now. All right. Well, I'm not going to twist any arms, so I guess we'll go ahead and close community forum, and we will move on to public hearings, a weed abatement. And I think what I'm going to do is I'm going to start with ex parte before we go into the report. So ex parte is if we've had conversations outside of this meeting, outside of this public process with anybody that may affect our decision-making process. So I'll go ahead and go from my right to my left if we have any ex parte on weed abatement.
I had a conversation with one resident who was concerned about being able to find a contractor to achieve the weed abatement in time.
No ex parte?
No ex parte.
None.
No ex parte.
Thank you. And this will be Chief Casey Bryson.
Thank you. Good evening, Mayor and Council. Tonight we have our weed abatement hearing of objections. A little bit of background. Seems like we've spoken quite a bit about a weed abatement over the last few months, but just refreshing our memory, this is a critical component of our city's fuel management plan. This is a part where the citizens defend their own property, take action to manage their own property, and keep their weeds at their annual grasses at less than 4 inches. All being part of all these parts of our weed abatement program, fuels management program, help us to be a fire safe community. The process starts with a inspection of all parcels in Atascadero over 11,000 lots. This was done the first week of April. We declared weeds a nuisance at the first council meeting in April, so we already took care of that. After that April inspection, we noticed nearly 4,000 people. This was up about 500 from last year. As you can imagine, the grass is pretty thick and tall this year, yeah. So that would be what we would expect from that. They have until June 1st to cut. I know I have heard a few concerns about people making sure they meet that deadline and getting a contractor, so we do have a list at the fire station, hoping we can help people make that deadline. Tonight, as part of the process, we hear any objections to the proposed removal of vegetative growth on anyone's property. So our recommendation is to hear any objections that the public brings forward for potential removal of growth and or refuse, and allow or overrule any objections, and then authorize the fire chief to proceed and perform the work of abatement. And with that, I'll turn it over for any questions.
Do we have any questions from the council?
I'm just curious, Chief, how many letters did we send out this year? It's usually around 3,000 or something, isn't it? Do you know how many we sent out?
Yeah, this year it was 3,992.
Got it. Thank you.
Councilmember Funk and then Fonzie.
Okay. So, Chief, if someone is uncertain about what needs to be done on their property, could they or their contractor contact the fire department for clarification?
Yeah, absolutely. They can call in. We'll definitely talk to them over the phone. If we need to do a consultation, we can do that at their property. All the requirements are on the website as well, as far as what the perimeter cut, how wide, and up driveways and that sort of thing. So all those details are on the website.
Great. And as you noted, that you have a list of contractors who could be asked to do this work if somebody is still looking for a contractor.
We do. Yeah, okay. We can email a list or call in, and we can give those names and numbers.
Thank you.
Chief, I understand we're having a rain on Friday, and it's supposed to be at least a quarter to half an inch. I'm wondering if the weeds keep growing after that June 1st deadline. Someone may have cut their weeds, but they actually come back. Do we reinspect, or we just ask them to keep them up?
We just ask people to keep their weeds mowed. It's supposed to be maintained at 4 inches. I imagine this year there will be quite a bit of regrowth. We do respond throughout the summer for complaints of people that do not do their weed abatement, some that get missed or maybe a flag lot that we can't see from the roadway. So we do find ourselves going out and doing a follow-up or a reinspection, if you call it, to ensure that we are maintaining those at 4 inches.
So it sounds like it's more of a complaint-driven thing?
At some point, yeah, it's complaint-driven after that inspection on June 1st.
Thank you.
Any other council questions? I'll look to the lights. Seeing none, we will go ahead and open this up to public comment. Is there anyone from the public wishing to comment on this item? Seeing none, we will close public comment and bring it back to the council for deliberation or a motion.
If there's no further discussion, I would move that we authorize the fire chief to proceed and perform the work of abatement.
Second.
We have a motion by Mayor Pro Tem Borbeau, a second by Councilmember Fonzie. Roll call, please.
Councilmember Fonzie?
Yes.
Councilmember Funk?
Yes.
Councilmember Newsom?
Yes.
Mayor Pro Tem Borbeau?
Yes.
Ma'am Moreno?
Yes, ma'am.
Motion passes.
Thank you. We're on to management report C1, amending the contract between the council and the Board of Administration for the CalPERS system. And this is our Deputy City Manager, Laura Christensen.
So this is just the adoption of the ordinance that we introduced at the last meeting. Typically, we put these on consent, but because this is a CalPERS, CalPERS does require us to do it in open meeting. So that's just what we are before you, is to adopt this ordinance.
And so this is essentially the same thing we went through and talked about at the last meeting and had
exactly the same. This is just the adoption of it now.
Yes. Thank you. I'll look to the lights. Any members of the council wishing to ask a question? Seeing none, I will go ahead and open it up to public comment. Any member from the public wishing to speak on this? Seeing none, we'll close public comment and bring it back for a motion.
I'll move council and adopt the ordinance as recommended.
I'll second the motion.
We have a motion by Mayor Pro Tem Borbeau, second by Councilmember Funk. Roll call, please.
And just because we're doing this in open, I'm going to read the title. An ordinance of the City Council of the City of Atascadero, California, authorizing an amendment to the contract between the City Council of the City of Atascadero and the Board of Administration of the California Public Employees Retirement System. Councilmember Funk.
Yes.
Councilmember Fonzie.
Yes.
Councilmember Newsom.
Yes.
Mayor Pro Tem Borbeau.
Yes.
Mayor Moreno.
Yes, ma'am.
Motion passes.
Thank you. Now, on to C2, wastewater rate study and proposed sewer service rate change. And this will be our Public Works Director, Nick DeBar.
Thank you, Mayor Moreno. The city's been doing a fee study for the wastewater financial outlook. There's a lot of capital projects planned in the next 10 years. Last year, we reviewed the master plans for both the collection system and the water reclamation plant. The rate study hasn't been done in quite some time. The last time the city increased their wastewater rates were in 1994. The previous to that was 93. And 94, it was just more of a volumetric classification reassignment of the equivalent dwelling units. And so this is quite a ways out of overdue, if you will. And the city hired Clayton Tuckfield with Tuckfield and Associates to prepare a wastewater rate study. Mr. Tuckfield has completed that, and the copy of the report is in your packet. And he's here tonight to present the report and the financial strategies associated with that. Then afterwards, if it's okay with you, Mayor Moreno, maybe we'll have Clayton present and maybe do a Q&A, perhaps, might be the simplest thing. And then there's a part two with how we move forward from here. There's a resolution that's also attached to the staff report for a Prop 218 process that we have never gone through. So that's one of the things we'd like to talk about tonight. And just kind of the next steps and kind of what to expect in the next month and a half, 2 months. So with that, I'll ask Mr. Tuckfield to come up, and he's got a PowerPoint presentation that he'll walk us through, and then be able to answer any questions after that.
Let me ask a quick question. Would it be best if we kept this somewhat informal, where you're going through it, and if we have a question on a slide, or do you think it would be best if we got all the way through it because something later might answer that question and keep you on track, and then ask our questions?
I think you could ask questions as we move through. If there's something that's going to show up later, I'll just let you know that's going to be later.
Okay.
On. Does that work?
Thank you, Mr. Okay. Mr. Tucker.
Well, good. Thank you, and good evening. I'm pleased to be able to make this presentation to you this evening. As was mentioned, this is a wastewater rate study, and we spent considerable time working with the city staff and the city engineer to make this come about. The things I'd like to talk about this evening are talk about a little bit about the background and why we did this study. We'll talk about some of the capital improvement projects, and I'll present those so you can see the significance of those. We'll then show you the financial plan, how we're going to make sure we pay for those projects, as well as continue to meet the operation and maintenance expense associated with operating the wastewater plant. I'll then discuss what cost of service is, how we set rates to recover that cost of service, and then present you a comparison of your bills to some of the neighboring cities and wastewater agencies so you can see how you compare. And then we'll open it up for discussion. So just a little bit of background. The council accepted the wastewater collection system and treatment plant master plans in 2017. Now, in those master plans, there was a number of substantial capital improvement projects that are required for replacement to keep the treatment plant operating sufficiently and in compliance. There's also a number of projects related to the lift stations and the collection system that need to be upgraded and replaced. So with that, the city is now taking proactive steps to make sure that you're going to be able to meet those requirements and keep the system in an operating and useful condition. So the purpose of this study that I'm presenting tonight was to evaluate whether you have sufficient revenues coming in to meet those future obligations. So for a five-year period, we want to look at what kind of capital improvement projects we need to pay for, as well as the O&M expense, and then the debt service that's going to be associated with financing those capital improvements. Additionally, once we know what the revenue targets are, we want to translate that into wastewater charges to charge our customers such that we can collect revenue from them that are fair and equitable to them, that provide predictable revenue to the city, that comply with legislation such as Proposition 218, and also meet what's called debt service coverage requirements. Okay? So this represents the 10-year capital improvement program that came about from those master plans. Now, the most significant is shown on the first line there. It's called process improvements and upgrades. So that'll be like essentially a four-year project to get design and construction built for a total cost of just over $23 million. The most significant projects other than that would be a little bit down under lift stations, lift station number 13. That total project cost is about $5.8 million, as well as lift station number 5, which is about $8.4 million. So what you should be able to just see from this is there's a number of replacements that are coming due that need to be upgraded, a number of costs related to the treatment plant, and so these are substantial improvements the cities are facing from those master plans. So once we know how much money we need to build the projects, we need to create a financial plan that pays for that project as well as the operation and maintenance expense. So to do that, we need to make some assumptions. For example, what kind of growth are we expecting for the city of Atascadero? From the master plans, they estimated 115 new equivalent dwelling units annually. Now, equivalent dwelling units, I'll explain what that is later on, but kind of right now, think of that as single-family homes. So 115 single-family homes or their equivalent would connect annually. Also, we're expecting the operation and maintenance expense to increase, as well as we're going to be adding about 2.5 positions to the wastewater system over the next 5 years. One of those will be added in 2021, and then a position and a half will be added in 2023-24. We are proposing to issue debt to finance some of the CIP, and as you saw, the CIP is quite significant. It was over $50 million. The city does not have that on hand, so you can expect we'll have to finance that in some manner. So if we do issue that debt, we're expecting to have a 30-year term on that and a 5% interest rate. Also, the city has cash on hand, so there is some interest earnings there. If you were to put that in LAIF, which I imagine you probably have some in LAIF, currently that's a little bit over 2%, but I've assumed 2% on your earnings going forward.
Mr. Tuckfield, if you could just for everyone listening, clarify that the $50 million is not what we're proposing to issue debt for. If you
that's
could.
Correct. Okay. I'm sorry about that. That's the overall 10-year expenditures that would total up, but we're not saying that'll be spent in the next 5 years. It'll be much less than that. From that graphic I showed, you can see the annual expenditures going there.
Thank you.
Right. Okay. This slide represents the financial plan going forward. So as you can see, let's look at the first 5 years. The dark blue column represents the operation and maintenance expense of the treatment plant, of the overall wastewater system. The light blue represents the capital replacement that occurs from the collection of the revenues. Then the orange represents connection fee revenue, which goes towards spending on capital improvement projects. And then the yellow column represents the new debt we're proposing would be issued to assist in paying for that capital improvement program. So the idea being that the green line represents the increases that would be proposed tonight, that increases and rather steeply until we get to the point where we can pay for that debt service in year 5. Now the red line represents if you didn't do any more rate adjustments, you left the rates in place, you'd expect that consistent revenue to be collected over time, and that's just not sufficient enough to be able to meet the obligations going forward. The purple line represents the cash on hand at the end of each fiscal year. So to begin with, the city has about $10 million, but as we move through the capital program, that money will be spent such that the purple line drops down to the black line, which is the target amount we want to keep on hand. So we're actually using up that cash to a certain target level by the end of the five-year period. And then if you look forward, that's beyond five-year period, but we project it anyway to see where we're going from there. So this should give you an idea of where we come up with revenues and where they're going to meet the obligations of the fund. Okay, so let's look at what cost of service is. So now that we know what our revenue targets are, we have to collect that revenue from our customers in a fair and equitable manner. So we look at what is the cost of providing service to each one of our customer types, whether it's residential, whether it's non-residential, could be single family, multifamily, business, church, other commercial type of properties, restaurants, etc. Now we do that based on how they use the system, and they use the system based on how much wastewater flow they contribute, as well as what's called strength. Strength is just like the pollutants in the wastewater. So some customers contribute a lot of pollutants in the wastewater, other customers do not contribute so much pollutants. So there are facilities in the system that treat that pollutants and some that treat just flow. So each customer is going to share proportionally in the system costs based on how they contribute that wastewater. Okay? So with that, we do that based on what's called an equivalent dwelling unit methodology. Now, this is the same method that's currently being used by the city, so we're not proposing anything different than it's already here right now. But we're going to define one equivalent dwelling unit as the flow and strength of a single-family residential customer. Then all other customers then receive a multiple of that, like 2 times or 3 times, based on their flow and strength in proportion to a single-family dwelling unit. So as an example, what I've shown here, multifamily is 0.75 EDUs, where a grocery store is 8 times an EDU. So each customer is going to have a multiple assigned to it. And so therefore, what we need to do is take our total cost divided by the total EDUs as provided by the system, and we get our charge per EDU. So I kind of just described what we did. This is the actual rates that would go into place. So on the far right column, you'll see the list of customers. We have residential and non-residential. So just take the first one, single family. The current charge is $20.18. So with this proposed study this evening, we're saying that would increase to $24.01 beginning August 8th, I believe. And you can see there's also a column called EDU multiple. So each one of those customer groups get assigned a charge based on their multiple times that $24.01. So that's how their rates are developed, and it is in proportion to their wastewater flow and strength of their contribution. Now, at the lower left, give you an idea what the increase is. I've shown here that the current bill for single family is $20.18. That increases to $24.01. That's a $3.83 a month increase for this first year. Now, let's take a look at how that compares with other neighboring agencies to the city. As you can see, the city is represented in the red, essentially showing that even with this increase we're proposing tonight, you would still be among the lowest in the county regarding wastewater charges. So I think that the charges are reasonable. And going forward, these costs are necessary to be recovered from the city in this proposal. And at this point, I guess I'd open it up for, no, we've got one more slide, sorry about that. This will be the next steps. So tonight I presented the draft rate study. If the council chooses to move forward, the city would mail out what's called Proposition 218 notices. This is a legal requirement to notify the public of the rate change. We would then have a public hearing on those charges on July 9th, and then assuming it passes through a protest vote, then the wastewater charges would go to the county before July 22nd. So at this point, let me open it up for questions.
Thank you very much. I will go ahead and look to the lights for questions of Mr. Tuckfield or if there's something that we want to bring staff into. So Councilmember Funk, followed by Councilmember Fonzie.
Yeah, thank you for the study. A couple of questions. Could you go back to the slide in which the bar chart where you've got the rate increase and the financial plan coming in?
Oh, financial plan?
Okay. Yeah. Can you explain, we appear to be adding proposed debt in two phases rather than a single debt issuance, a debt increase in 2021 and 21-22, and then a larger debt service adding in 22-23. Can you explain the expectation of those two different debt service issuances?
Yes. Based on the way the capital expenditures were being spent in the 10-year plan, the most efficient way to keep the rates as low as possible was to have two different debt issues. That way the payment for the larger issue wouldn't start until the fifth year, whereas the smaller issue would begin in year three. So I think in this case, the first issue goes towards partially financing that improvements at the plant plus the lift station in that particular year. And then in the fifth year, that debt goes to pay for almost all of that treatment plant construction.
Okay. And is that is your analysis of the relative cost of that inclusive of the cost of the staff's time in doing two separate debt issuances as opposed to one?
I guess I would have to say staff's time is not generally included in the debt issue. There are issuance expenses, but usually does not include staff time.
Mm-hmm. I'll ask the staff to comment on that.
Well, it takes time to issue debt. The amount of interest on these large debt service is far exceeds the cost of the staff time to do it. And so it does make financial sense to do that. We'll also be looking at other financing methodologies to see if we can take advantage of some of the infrastructure programs that are out there and some of those other things. But right now, this is our best plan as we continue to look for ways to bring those costs down.
Okay, thank you. And then if you could go to the list of all the different types of services. Yeah, back one.
I'm sorry.
There we go. Okay, so I noticed that some of our categories are broken out. While some of them say, like gymnasium, for instance, might be very different whether you have a pool or not, some of those costs, but that is a single category. My understanding is that the current proposal has not allowed for a reconsideration of any of those divisions, but that perhaps that would be looked at in the future. Is that correct?
Yes, it is correct. When we initially did this study in the past months, we discussed that with city staff, and we noted that there probably should be some better descriptions and some better categories here for most of the customers that the city serves. The city has gone through that, and I think they're currently working on that. Maybe Public Works might be able to make comment on that.
And
Just to piggyback off that, currently we do have a consultant that's doing a 100% audit of all the sewer connections to make sure that their classifications are in order with these. We're also looking at the water company's classification and expanding the commercial in particular on this list. And it's one of the things that we hope to have back to the city council within a year, in time for next rate. So this process we're going through tonight would just be a 1 year increase, and then the hopes of doing this, what's called a volumetric analysis, with where we get the water records of customers and we sync them up and make sure that, say, you know, the gymnasiums are all, you know, paying their fair share if they have two pools and, you know, tent showers and spas and restaurants and stuff versus one that has, you know, restrooms, basically, you know, that they're paying their equitable share of the cost. So we need to do that before, you know, another rate study is done, and then that'll help us kind of dial in a little bit better to make sure that all the customers are paying their equitable share of the cost.
Good. And I notice also that the charge currently for a hotel room or a motel room is a little less than, say, a senior apartment unit, even though frequently neither of those would involve, say, a kitchen or substantial cooking. So will that consideration of relative impact be part of that volumetric study?
It will. All these classifications will be evaluated, and then expansion of some of the classifications will also occur, just to make sure that, you know, like, you don't see brewery up there, right?
Right.
How many breweries do we have coming into town? So the footnote on there, we need to determine that based on the California Plumbing Code or other means as deemed appropriate by the city engineer. So sometimes what we'll do is, you know, we might request their water consumption data for the first few years to make sure that, you know, they're fitting into one of these categories in a fair manner.
Thank you. That seems appropriate. And certainly, as we have costs we need to cover, we need to make sure that the sewer fees are keeping up so that we are not ending up with a massive sticker shock on our folks in the future. Okay, one last question. And this is probably for you, Nick. Mr. Tucker mentioned that we are going to be adding positions to the wastewater treatment plant, to the operators. Can you clarify for the benefit of the public what the need for those additional positions? I know our staff's been running really lean.
We have. We like having a lean staff. I personally like that. But at some point, with the treatment plant improvements and, I was asked earlier, $23 million for treatment plant process improvements and upgrades. It's basically building a new treatment plant is what that is. So the stabilization ponds that we have out there, they were built in the 1970s. So we have it's actually a very efficient plant right now, but we've ran out of room to expand those stabilization ponds. We're bounded by floodplains on one side and archaeological areas on another that we can't really dig into. So we can't really expand the plant, and really the characteristics of our sewer influent have changed over the years. So, the water conservation fixtures that everybody is mandated to put in their homes, the conservation efforts that everybody's doing as well, that's changed the characteristic of the strength of the sewage coming into the plant. So our current plant really isn't really designed to handle that stronger wastewater strength. So we have made some modifications to it to accommodate that, but it's still working. We're still meeting all state requirements for treatment. But it's one of it is that we're running out of room, and our treatment process is a bit antiquated, if you will. So we're still driving around in a leaded car, that takes leaded gasoline, basically.
Yeah, that clarifies the need for the capital improvement. I was asking about the additional positions, the FTEs.
Sorry,
that's
I was
okay.
going to get to that.
That's okay.
I got lost in the process, I guess. So anyways, the new plant will be more of a mechanical plant. It's going to have more controls, more mechanical-type equipment versus just a pond system. So it's going to be requiring more hands-on operation versus the other one. So the one right now, you might open a valve. There's a lot of hydraulics involved, so you don't need to operate too much. This new one, it'll be basically recycling activated sludge and all these other things, and it'll just need to be monitored a little closer and more treatment. We know we're going to have a new discharge requirement that we're going to have to meet. It's going to be more strict than the one we have right now. Anytime we touch a plant, that's going to be open for a reevaluation by the water board. So all these things will create that. And the other thing, too, is our infrastructure is aging. So as the infrastructure ages, it requires more inspection, more monitoring, more repairs. So all these things contribute to more staff time.
Okay, thank you.
Councilmember Fonzie.
Thank you. Thank you for coming, Mr. Tuckfield. Our staff report reads a little bit different than the presentation that you gave us tonight. I know that we're voting on only 1 year's increase, which is about 19% of the current cost. But our staff report says that 19% will continue over the next 5 years. So it'd be 19% this year and 19% the next year and on and on. And we're doing the 218 mailing and so forth just this year and then coming back next year and doing it again. I'm wondering if that was your suggestion or why is this in here?
What the proposal was, so when we do typical rate studies, you have the option to adopt rates for a five-year period. When I do these studies, I obviously develop rates for those 5 years. When we talked with city staff regarding that, we noted the issues that we discussed, the customer classes and a number of other issues, but they wanted, my understanding was, you wanted to get this capital improvement program going. So through discussions with staff, we thought we'd get the first increase in place, and then we're going to revisit this about 6 months to a year from now. So that's why we're only proposing to adopt 1 year of that 19% increase. So that way, when we come back again next year, we'll be looking at a more refined look at this. So we're only looking at just 1 year, even though we can't adopt five.
So if I'm understanding you right, we really need to have about 19% for those 5 years in order to float a bond or whatever financing means we're going to take on in the future. Is that correct?
It would be correct if this, we weren't looking at refinements going forward. For example, we've assumed this particular type of financing for this study, whereas staff, we have discussed its potential they could get some less costly financing, in which case the rates wouldn't be so high. So we thought by adopting just 1 year, taking a look again, staff getting some time to refine some of these assumptions, like financing and the customer classifications, that the rates might actually be able to come down.
But that would mean we'd have to do our Prop 218 mailing next year again.
That's correct. You'll have to do the Prop 218 again next year.
So in your opinion, is that the most efficient way to do it, or would it be better to go ahead and just say 19% a year for 5 years and do one Prop 218 and be done with it?
Based on the potential savings that could occur through a different method of financing, I would probably say the city staff has made a good choice.
Thank you.
Mayor Pro Tem Borbo.
Thank you, and thank you for those questions, because both of you asked questions I was going to ask. And a key one, of course, being that this we're only technically voting on a single year, but we're kind of having a discussion about the five-year prospect.
Right.
In regards to the question Councilmember Funk had regarding financing costs, if you could go to that slide that reflects the bar graph.
This slide?
Yes, that slide, correct. Thank you. I was a little confused, too, because looking at the first 2 years there where proposed debt is a cost, that seems so small. I'm thinking, you know, why would we even borrow? But that's the debt service cost, not the size of the debt issuance, if I read Table 7 correctly.
It just worked out when looking at the financial plan, different scenarios to try to keep that increase down. That was a way to do that. Because in that fifth year, that's where all the significant cost is, that $23 million for construction. So,
well, if I read the chart on, and for council members, this is on page 317 of the agenda, under new bond proceeds, it reflects a $13 million set of proceeds in 21-22 and a $10 million set of proceeds in 23-24. This yellow bar just represents the principal and interest payments, if I'm not mistaken, or
yeah, the
perhaps
would,
you're not the right one for the answer.
Yeah,
that
the yellow would represent principal and interest payments. That's
right.
Correct.
So it's not the size of the debt that's being incurred
that's
at that
correct.
Time. Because otherwise, it would be, you know, why would we go out and borrow this tiny sliver of money? It wouldn't make sense. Okay.
That's correct.
Make sure that's clear. And again, regarding the question, though, Nick, that Councilmember Funk asked regarding the necessity, what necessitates the additional staff? Because over the long haul, you know, additional staff over a 10, 20, 30-year period could negate, you know, or take up a lot of costs. And my question is, I assume that in evaluating options here in terms of what kind of improvements in terms of what will be required to be done by the Water Board and the kind of options we have, there wasn't an option that, even if it was a little more expensive, would have negated the need for increased staff?
Not really. You know, the treatment plan requires a certain amount of effort to run and operate. Mechanical plants are more hands-on. They require more, I guess, oversight, and even with all the technology out there, it still does. And just the aging infrastructure piece as well. This is kind of a master financial plan for the plant as well. So, you know, the report, while these are our best guess, you know, we want to be a bit conservative in our estimates on this. So we don't want to say we can do with, you know, less staff and then shortchange ourselves and not have enough money to actually adequately run the plant. So the way I would see it is any increase in staff is going to be part of the budget process. So the city council is going to, wouldn't automatically be asking, hey, we want you to approve more staff for the treatment plant tonight. This would be something that would have to be vetted in the public, you know, the budgetary process.
All right. Thank you. And then in terms of, it had been my understanding that you know, because we haven't raised rates for 25 years, which is incredible, and the question in anybody's mind should not be why are we raising rates, but why haven't we done so sooner under those circumstances, but I had understood that we are running an operating deficit, which would also, further underscore the need to do a rate increase kind of as soon as possible. But I'm not necessarily seeing that in these charts and these numbers I'm reading in the staff report.
So I think there's a little bit of difference between the way this chart is laid out and the way we would calculate operating at a deficit. So we use, in our wastewater fund, we calculate not just operating maintenance and operations and maintenance, but also depreciation on existing assets. So mm-hmm. each year you're using a portion of the assets. The amount of revenue that we have been bringing in for the last couple of years has not been enough to meet both depreciation and operations and expenses. So I think in 2018, our wastewater fund showed a $400,000 loss. Also remember that we pretty much should be putting in an average of $1.6 million in capital. Our depreciation, because the plant's 50 years old, is running around $700,000. So we have been eating into those reserves more and more each year, just trying to keep up on that capital replacement.
Right. Thank you. I think that's a very critical point. And then if you could go to the slide that shows the rate comparison between ourselves and the other, you know, agencies in the county. I think this kind of says it all, this chart does, but the red line, the second one where you reflect August 2019 rates, which would be the rates, you know, if there's no successful protest, et cetera.
Yeah, that's correct.
That's just for this single year. One could see with over the long haul, if we did proceed with a series of 90% rate increases, we would end up at about $40 or thereabouts. So we would be a little higher than some of the others, but still on the low end. Is that correct?
Well, that would be correct if none of the other agencies increased their rates.
Right.
So I think it would be reasonable to assume that all these rates will continue to shift higher as we move forward through the next annual period. It's just the years might be increasing a little faster initially, but then you would be the same probably as everybody else.
Once
we'll you
get there. Still be on the low end. But
you'd still be on the
right.
low end. That's
right. Thank you very much.
I think you see a common theme. We're a little fiscally squeaky, and we want to make sure that when we're passing rates on to the customers, to the residents, that it's really necessary. The one question I had remaining is, I was looking on page 326 in the appendix with all the estimates for the increases, and I don't have a specific question about any of those numbers, but I was looking at electricity, and in trying to keep rates low, one of the things I know we had looked at in the past is possibly adding solar out there. And I know with the current configuration that's challenging. I'm wondering, with the new plant that would be coming on, is there a potential of adding solar? Could we see some savings in electricity that could end up being passed along to the consumers?
We sure can. And we actually looked at this and had two separate companies at one time, you know, look at and analyze what our need would be out there and the payback period. And the payback periods came back 10 to 15 years for paying for solar. The solar wouldn't, we'd still have to rely on some, you know, other power supplies. But the solar, what we looked at was trying to meet the 75% consumption demand by solar. You know, with solar right now, the main thing is we have pumps running out there that, you know, when they start up, they take a tremendous amount of energy to get going. So, you know, it's not like running a light bulb or something like this. So, you know, storage of that power to be able to turn pumps on and off. Obviously, variable frequency drives where they ramp up very slowly and down save a lot of energy as well. So we'll have more real estate out there with, you know, an oxidation ditch process or BioLac process. So the way kind of I envision this in the future, in a few years, if we do this upgrade, is that a lot of the, ponds out there might get filled in, or they might stay lower, just be dry, and you can put solar panels out there to be able, we'll have some available real estate to install solar panels. And those archaeological sites as well, as long as we're not disturbing them, my understanding is that we can install, you know, solar panels on the surface. But so we've got some options out there to be able to accommodate that. But, you know, everybody's, I know with Diablo closing, and everybody's a little bit on pins and needles about what our energy rates are going to become. I think it's something that we really need to keep in the forefront as we move these improvements along.
So the solution of the land availability will be solved, and the other piece of it is, you know, what is the cost? Is it that 10 to 15 year capture? Does it pencil out? So that's something that we'll be looking at as we're moving on.
Absolutely.
Okay. Thank you. I see Councilmember Funk has another question.
Yes, following up on the question of solar, the situation you described in terms of aiming to cover 75% of power consumption with solar, as you described it, involved concern about being able to generate enough capacity consistently to cover the pumps that would need to start up. Wouldn't the wastewater plant be connected to the grid?
Oh, absolutely. Yep.
Okay, so if it's connected to the grid, then if we generate more power from that location than we can use at any particular point, that goes to the grid, is it? And if we consume then more power, at a point to avoid starting up a pump or closing down and starting up, that can be obtained from the grid. So you're not worrying about investing in battery capacity to keep the plant off the grid. You're looking at investing in the opportunity to have solar basically not having to be dependent on the power company rates, but to be able to be a generator of power to the benefit of our ratepayers and taxpayers.
That is correct.
Okay, yep. Yeah.
Yeah, we'll be connected to the grid because there will be times where we'll have rain, hopefully for a few days, and we need to, draw from the grid and pay PG&E, and other times that we won't have to.
And when, in the course of the development of the particular plans for thing, when will we hear back about more about the incorporation of significant solar capacity into the wastewater treatment plant?
I think that'll happen once we get into the actual planning, preparing preliminary engineering work for the plant. So, that's probably a couple years out. The first thing we want to do is really, as part of the other thing, as Councilmember Fonzi mentioned, was whether or not we should do 5 years now or wait and come back later. That's one of the things we want to do is get on the state revolving fund, because that's a, with this analysis, Mr. Tuckfield had to assume bonding. And if we can get on that state revolving fund loan, that's a way better way to go, because you don't really start paying interest until the project is complete. So you might have 2 to 3 years of interest-free loans, and those loans are very low interest rates. So, we'll be looking at all those things. And as we move ahead planning these improvements, we'll certainly be providing the City Council updates and letting you know where we're at, and there'll be decisions to make on different treatment processes and incorporating things like solar and other components of the plant.
Sure, certainly, because solar financially is a money up front for savings over time, and therefore if you're able to get that money up front at a substantially less rate or start paying it much later, that will in turn shorten the payback period and make the solar even more attractive.
Right, and there's a guaranteed savings type of process that if we do that, we'll want to make sure we incorporate into our agreement as well. So,
what we can say about our city staff is, year after year, you're always looking for savings, way to save for, because, everything we do, people will say like, oh, the city, but the city is all of us. And so you are always looking for ways to keep costs low and really respecting that it's, you know, the taxpayer that's funding all of this. And so we do what we can. And yet here we are in a situation where, you know, we, to keep this plant going decades into the future, we need to be looking at these rates. So let's see some more questions. Councilmember Newsom, followed by Mayor Pro Tem Borbo.
To look over my notes here. You'd indicated that the full audit and inventory is going to be completed. Do you have a completion date on that?
Later this year.
And with that, since this upgrade or improvements were based on a master plan approved in 2017, when do you expect to have a full picture of your needs for the next 5 years?
By this time next year. So I know that's kind of a generality, but we're working actively right now with another engineering consultant that's going through. They're doing a full audit on all our customers and all the properties that are connected and making sure that, you know, these categories, user categories that we'll be looking at potentially expanding fit in there neatly, and then looking at, you know, basically other new businesses and new developments that occur to make sure that they fit in a fair and equitable manner.
I do want to mention that the staff was nice enough to give me and Councilmember Funk a tour of the facilities, and I think that is an amazing process. There's so much that goes into it that you can't even begin to comprehend, even with this talented list of advisors. I think having another year to really evaluate our five-year needs will be beneficial, as well as providing the information out there, because it is information overload. But I do see that you guys have broken it down into really understandable pieces, and thank you for your presentation. That was very easy to follow.
Thank you. Your comments prompted a question in my mind, because we approve this, if we approve this, you know, 1 year rate increase for 218 purposes tonight, then you come back in a year, and what you come back with in a year may be this plan, let's say, of further 19% rate increases for another 4 years. But if you're successful in the kind of, you know, obtaining lower interest financing or grant funding or whatever, you come back with perhaps a lower plan. But even at that point, you know, there's, if you haven't succeeded at that point, there's still a chance you could succeed later. So my question is this: if you came back a year from now and we approved four more 19% rate increases, or let's say there were 17% rate increases for whatever reason, and then you were more successful, if you have a approved rate increase but your costs come in lower, we can always, I assume, you know, change the ramp of the rate schedule without having to go out for a, you don't need 218 approval for a reduction in your rate schedule, I guess is my question.
You do not, only increases, my understanding. And
okay.
And that's what we're, you know, what we want to do is get a rate study done every 5 years, that, and you can only go out 5 years, so you can't set rates for the next 20 years. And it seems kind of ridiculous to try to predict what you need in 20 years, but I guess us engineers try to do that stuff. But, you know, we only want to go out 5 years. That's the most we can go out per regulations. And then basically set those rates and adjust them. You know, so every 5 years we're adjusting them accordingly. So, you know, the next two Prop 18 process that we'd go through would be to adopt rates for the next 5 years. This is just a one-year rate. And honestly, it's just buying us a little time to complete this full audit and the volumetric analysis and make sure we have the categories. We have a lot of development, as you're all aware, coming into town. As mentioned, the breweries, we don't really have a category for breweries, so we got to kind of work with them to determine what their EDU rate is. And, you know, for Director Dunsmore's team, too, when he has, you know, these developers calling and they want to bring in a business, for them to be able to say, okay, your rate's going to be this, and, you know, just really clarifying a lot of these things. So I think from a customer service standpoint, development type, you know, standpoint as well, it's a very good service to be able to provide.
All right. Thank you.
Thank you. All right. So it appears we have some more questions. Councilmember Fonzie.
It just came to mind when you were talking, Mr. Verbeau.
Charles has that effect on people. And then people have that effect on Charles, and it just keeps swirling.
But one of the things that our wastewater treatment plant does so well is it takes the treated wastewater and it puts it back into our aquifer and cleanses it actually through the sand, and that's quite remarkable, and we're one of the few cities that does that. I'm hoping that our improvements will not take that asset away. Is that anticipated to still continue?
That's a great question, and, you know, it's one I'm happy to answer, and the answer is no. We will still percolate our treated wastewater back into the groundwater, and as you're all aware, that's about 25% of what the citywide consumption is for water, so it's really a great that's why we call it a water reclamation plant. We used to call these a wastewater treatment plant, but we're really reclaiming the water and recycling that. And, you know, the city's had such a extraordinary, you know, history and success of doing that. And all the other new treatment plants, you know, the one that Paso Robles just built for, I forget how much money, but it was $50 million or something like that. They're doing exactly what we're doing, except they have, you know, the newer technology for treating, but they're perking it back into the ground.
Well, part two of that question would be, since this is involving putting water back into the aquifer, is there any possibility that we can get some kind of grants or other monies from the state? Because water is very much on the mind of our state, as always. And we're actually replenishing our aquifer. Is that something that we're going to be looking into?
We sure are. And actually, the city manager myself met last week with Congressman Carbrawl. And he actually talked about some of these. And we met with some other, the county and some other cities in the county. And he was very interested in finding money and finding legislation at the national level to be able to help us out.
Good to hear. It's a lot of money to do anything to sewage treatment plants, and we're not a big town. Thank you.
And more questions from Councilmember Funk.
Yes, this coming back, this is for Rochelle. We noted earlier that the revenue we currently generate from the plant does not cover the cost of both the operations and maintenance and depreciation, and that the $4 a month, that roughly $4 a month increase that we're talking about per family is something that will help get us towards that point. Since we're not doing that, is the effect of that is either we're deferring maintenance, or the cost of the operation of this of the wastewater treatment plant is being covered in part, is being subsidized by people whose neighborhoods, unlike mine, are not on the sewer system. Is that a fair characterization of what our situation is?
It is not yet. Certainly, if it's taken to the extreme, it can be there. Right now, what's happening is that there has been money put away. As we were covering depreciation back in 93, this was enough to not only meet operations but also capital replacement. And we accumulated some cash to replace old and aging infrastructures with the date that someday we're going to have to replace the plant. Obviously, that day is getting here. So what it means is that we're not putting enough away to do that, and what we're doing is we're eating down our cash reserves in the wastewater treatment fund. Certainly, if you ever got to the point where you ate down all of your cash reserves, all of the cash in the wastewater fund, you would have to be subsidized by general taxpayers. But we do have some funds there available, and so we have a few years out to do that. And that I'm just talking about the cash in the wastewater fund. That $10 million that is sitting in the wastewater fund is helping us reduce the amount of debt service that we have to issue. Mm-hmm. That's help going a long way towards replacing that plant. So that is very critical cash to make, keep and maintain and keep building.
Yes, in something in the that involves as much cash flow as our treatment system does, it's really important for us to have those financial reserves so that we are planning and preparing for the needs of the community in the future, and we don't shock our citizens with needing to go from, you know, with a very large increase suddenly. Thank you.
All right. So if there are any other questions, and if we could stick to questions right now, any others that we have at the moment? I'm seeing none with the lights. I'm seeing no nods. All right. So I think, Nick, you wanted to go on and talk about the Prop 218 process. Mr. Tuckfield, thank you so much. That was an excellent report. And I know you'll stay around for the rest of the item here.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Okay, and then Luke can load up my other presentation. I promise it's short. It's like six slides. That's so unlike me, but
it's very unlike you.
So a little bit about Prop 218. It was this was a law that was passed in 1995 by the California voters, right after our last increase, I might add, and it really requires that certain procedures are followed to property-related fees. Proposed by government agencies. So, and they have this process called the majority protest process. And what this majority protest is that if a majority of the parcels that are subject to the rate increase protest the increase, that, I mean, it's real simple. The city can't increase the rates. So it's kind of that in a nutshell. There was a number of challenges to this, and I talked about a little bit in the report, and I won't go over that. The main thing is like some cities, they have to send to tenants, you know, because, say, you know, like when I first moved here and I was living up in Paso Robles, and I was responsible for paying the water and sewer bill, so, but I didn't own the house that I lived in. I was renting it, and so they would, if they would have done this, they would have had to send me a notice as well as the property owner. Both of us could have turned in a protest vote, but it would have only counted for one vote. If I would have done it and they didn't, be one vote. If they did, I didn't, one vote. If we both did, one vote. So in our case, it's a little different. Basically collect the revenue from placing the charges on and the fees on property taxes. So there's no way to, you know, pass that on. So in our case, this will be a much simpler way, and we'll have to mail out fewer notices. And there's just under 6,000 properties that we'll have to send that to. Part of the compliance, there's a draft resolution that our city clerk worked on for this, and she will be primarily responsible for overseeing it, and with my help as she needs it. And anyways, the resolution really establishes our procedures and really defines what those procedures are going to be, when we start counting the ballots, you know, how that whole thing plays out, just because it is... These Prop 218 procedures have been subject to some challenges in the past, so we want to make sure that our process is bulletproof and that we have the best success to have these rates increased. Basically, it also requires a public, Prop 218 does require a public hearing, and that public hearing needs to have at least a 45-day notice of that public hearing. Mails sent out, and you know, the protests can start coming in and be kept by the clerk, and then they can actually deliver them as well at the public hearing. So if I'm not sure if our city clerk wants to talk about this anymore or if I missed anything, I like I said, I only have six slides, so. Okay, she's good. So our next steps tonight would be to direct staff to administer the Prop 218 process. There's a few other recommendations I'll get to here in a second. If that is approved, then by next Friday, we will have a notice sent out to all the affected property owners, our customers, basically. And those notices will be mailed out by May 24th. You know, during that time frame, the public hearing will also be in the notice. It'll be set for the council meeting on July 9th. At that meeting, there'll be a resolution, two resolutions that'll be part of the packet. One, if the majority protest vote succeeds and we have more than a majority that protest, there'll be one resolution, another if it does not succeed. Also, then the deadline to, as I mentioned, we collect our sewer charges on property taxes. So the county, they have a July 22nd deadline to be able to assess any levies on the property tax rolls. So we'll have to meet that deadline. And then one of the things that our city attorney's office mentioned is that they recommend in our resolution that we have that night if the increase is successful, is that the rates do not go into effect for 30 days. So we'll have to have a weighted calculation for those rates that we levy. So it'll be basically 38 days at the current rate that we have right now, and then the difference of that 365 days at the new rate. So those would be the rates that we assess. And I did a calculation. It was like the average or that weighted rate was like $23.61. So in reference, that's $20.18 we're currently paying.
Like $5 over the whole year or something like that.
Right. So tonight, the recommendations, one, receive and file Mr. Tuckfield's report on the wastewater rate study. Two, adopt that draft resolution establishing procedures for the submission and tabulation of protest in connection with rate hearings conducted pursuant to requirements of Prop 218. Three, direct staff to administer the Prop 218 majority protest process and send out notice of proposed increases to all property owners connected to the municipal sanitary sewer system. Four, set a public hearing on July 9th, 2019 for the City Council's consideration of the proposed wastewater rate increases. Five, approve a budget amendment and authorize the Director of Administrative Services to appropriate $5,000 from the Wastewater Fund for costs related to the Prop 218 majority protest process. This is primarily printing and mailing cost. And then six, approve a budget amendment and authorization and authorize the Director of Administrative Services to appropriate an additional $15,000 from the Wastewater Fund to professional services related to wastewater rate study and support activities. So this would be essentially for Mr. Tuckfield for his report tonight, some of the updates to it, as well as that process that we have our other consultant working on with related to the user classification and the volumetric analysis. So with that, I can take any other questions. Oh, our city clerk has something to add.
So I guess I do have something on the Prop 218. I just want to make sure that everyone understands that it's a protest. And so there are very specific requirements for filing a protest, which is what's outlined in that resolution that's before you tonight for approval. And because this is much different than most people are used to, and it's the first time we're doing one in the city, we are going to put some stuff on our website about Prop 218, about the protest, and this resolution will be there as well so that people can go on, and if they are interested in filing a protest, it details out exactly what they need to do in order to file that protest. So I just want to make sure that those that are listening understand that in order for a protest, it's a written protest So not just coming to the council meeting and verbally protesting. In order for a protest to count, it does have to be submitted in writing, and there are very specific requirements for how that protest be submitted. So I just want to make sure that everyone kind of understands that, and the notice will reference some of that, but because we're mailing this out to, you know, what, 5,000 plus, it won't have all of that, but it'll reference them where to go to get the information if they are interested in filing a written protest, since it is a whole resolution based on that.
Okay, so with the notice that about 6,000 people get in the mail will not detail out exactly how to protest. It will say, if you want to protest, go here to get the information. And so that you're saying will be on the website for people who, you know, aren't maybe internet savvy or that's not the way they communicate. Will this be something where they can call, they can come in? How do we make this easy for people to do a protest?
Yes. So they can come into, if they come into City Hall down at the counter, they'll have the resolution as well, which details how to do it. There'll also be, on the notice, there's a number to call. So if they call that number or talk to, if they call, they'll go to Public Works and they can detail that out to how you file the written protest. So all that information will be available both on our website and by contacting the city.
Okay, so multiple ways readily available for people to find out how to do that.
Right.
Excellent. Thank you. Well, this is pretty standard information. I don't imagine that we have a lot of questions on it, but I'll see if we do before we go to public comment on this entire issue. I'm not seeing any questions, so let's go ahead and open this up to public comment with regards to anything that we've talked about here with the wastewater rate increases. Any questions you have about that, any comments, feel free to come forward now. See nobody sprinting to the lectern. I will close public comment and bring it back to council. I would ask, with regards to the recommendations, when a motion is made, are we able to make it just all at once, proves to move staff recommendations 1 through 6, and that's fine? Okay, thank you. Do we have any final questions or particular points of deliberation? Not seeing any lights. I will say that, again, I really appreciate our city staff. We are typically a city that looks to be as economical as possible, and not having raised rates in 25 years, I can say that we've done a pretty good job. But here we are at the place where we're needing to do this, and I think at least those few of you that are here, and hopefully those of you that are watching and listening, are understanding the need for this. If we're to be good stewards of the wastewater treatment plant and have this working for decades into the future, this is something we need to do. And I think I commend staff, because this is a tough process to go through. It's a lot of work, and we have some particular constraints because the water company is a private water company. We don't have access to that information. So everything we need to do, we have a little bit of a challenge with that. So it takes a little bit more time. And so I thank you for moving forward with this first year, because I think that's very important for that fiscal responsibility so that we get moving with this. And I thank you for being so proactive and looking for solutions to continue to save our ratepayers money, and hopefully we see that in the future. With that, I will ask if we have a motion.
I would move the staff's 6 recommendations as listed.
I'll second.
We have a motion by Councilmember Funk and a second by Mayor Pro Tem Bourbeau. Roll call, please.
Councilmember Funk?
Yes.
Councilmember Fonzie?
Yes.
Councilmember Newsom?
Yes.
Mayor Pro Tem Bourbeau?
Yes.
Mayor Moreno?
Yes, ma'am.
Motion passes.
Thank you. That was fairly painless. Okay, we are on to council announcements and committee reports. I will go from my right to my left.
Okay, then Homeless Services Oversight Council is meeting tomorrow. Also, a point of interest, I know some people were aware that ECHO might be bringing a proposal to the council. At one point, it was tentatively scheduled for tonight's meeting, and that my understanding is that will be coming to us, but it's going to go to the Planning Commission first, and we should see that a little bit later during the summer, just so folks know that it's still in process. We just changed the sequence. And that's all I have to report tonight.
No report. Laugh goes tomorrow.
Had the mayor's meeting last week. We heard from our league, not our league rep, but a policy representative from the league, and just talked about several things, including PERS and some upcoming legislation with the state that is a bit concerning, but probably nothing we all haven't read in the news or heard about or know about. In particular, just talking about PERS sort of having a fiscal year 24-25 being this point where it can start, I hate to use the phrase going off the cliff, but that's sort of the year of reckoning. So looking at what are the options, at a council meeting probably a year or so ago, I was querying why PERS doesn't seem to make the money that it should in the market, and come to find out it's because of divesting over the years of things that the legislature didn't want to invest in. And so we look currently at the discount rate of 7%, which is what we're working down to over the next few years. And PERS is saying they don't expect to make any more than 6.2%. So just a little frightening. Again, various things of legislation that I won't bore you with. There are a few of us. I know Councilmember Funk and myself. I don't know if anyone else and Rochelle were going to the League of California Cities, kind of tri-counties dinner this Friday. So it's an opportunity for us to hear more from our league representatives and kind of network with others throughout the tri-county areas. And that's always helpful in the position that we're in. So I'm looking forward to that. And that's about it.
Thank you. The IWMA met earlier in May, and fairly routine, went over a lot of things, but mostly over the budget for the upcoming year, and approved that. There will be some additional one-time expenditures for IWMA in this upcoming year, but it has more than enough reserves to handle that. And then IWMA meeting for June is canceled. Be meeting again in July, and at that point in time, the new general manager, Mr. Brooke Stayer, will be on board. And there's also, at the request of some of the board members, the issue of a polystyrene ban countywide will be brought back. It was originally going to be brought back last September, but due to turmoil, resignation of the general managers, a lot of turmoil on the board, or not on the board, but in the agency, that the opportunity to discuss those kind of things was pushed off for several months. But for those of you who are interested in that, that will be coming back at the July meeting for discussion. Also, on Thursday here in this building in room 306, we'll be having another Finance Committee meeting as we work with the staff on developing the 2019 to 2021 budget. And the public is welcome at that meeting. And I believe we'll be discussing capital projects at this meeting. Yes. So that's in room 306 here at 4 o'clock. And then on Friday morning, we have the City Schools Committee, where we will meet with a couple of us. We'll meet with a couple of school board members and both city and school staff to talk over issues of mutual interest. And that's in room 106 here in City Hall. And that's it. Thank you.
Thank you, Charles. You touched on one of my committees, the City and Schools Committee. The City of Atascadero Design Review Committee has a tentative schedule for May 29th. Our May 15th was canceled. I attended a Visits Locale community leader briefing, which had draft recommendations from destination management strategy. It was very insightful. Just came back and discussed all of the different ways to grow our community and the things that were important to the surveys they received. And the number one listed was residents' quality of life. So it's good to see that our visions and our community are coming together and really voicing their concerns on our community growth. And that's all I have. Thank you.
Thank you. And I'm not seeing any individual determination or actions. Anybody going once, twice? Adjourned.